and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker, and on this episode, I'm going to be speaking to James Cowdell. He is the brand strategist, head of brand for Anne Sons, and let me give you a little spiel on Anne Sons. The Anne Sons project is the creation of a range of unique workwear clothing designed by and for craftspeople, artisan makers, and creative pioneers in their chosen fields of endeavor. And that's from their website, annesons.co.uk. I implore you to go and check out the brand. Have a look at the wonderful imagery. One thing that really spoke to me about this brand, and we'll get into that in the interview, is all the fantastic lifestyle imagery and videos that they have on their site. So that interview of James coming up shortly. Before that, make sure you're checking out menswearstyle.co.uk. We'll put all the show notes over there. Stay up to date with the latest trends, fashion articles, and one of the best ways to do that is, of course, follow us on the social. Just punch in Menswear Style on your smartphone there. And we'll turn up Instagram, Twitter, all the usual places and faces. Okay, so, I forgot to mention, if you want to get in touch with the show, maybe you want to tell us about your journey and your brand, email us at info@menswearstyle.co.uk, okay? Let's get into that interview with James now. We're going to jump straight in at the start. He's going to talk about Philip James, who is the creative founder. Unfortunately, he can be on the call with us. So if you hear Philip's names mentioned, that's who he's referring to. But you'll get the drift. Here we go.
Well, I'll start with the backstory, I guess, in that, and it's a rather strange one. Both neither Phil or I are from the industry as such. We both run agencies. I run a branding agency, a creative agency, and Phil runs a production studio, so CGI, moving imagery and stills. Mm-hmm. So the two of us had a working relationship and a personal relationship for a number of years, worked together on some great projects. I loved what he did, and likewise. So we sort of shared a similar creative approach and style to what we were doing. But it was very much Phil's idea. This was Phil's, he called it his midlife crisis at one point, but it was an opportunity for him based purely out of frustration and need, really. He enjoys fashion. He likes fashion, but his job required him to be, working in studios on location and, very physical work, very demanding of the clothes that he was wearing. So he adopted that workwear kind of heritage style anyway, but found himself looking around 10 or so different websites to get this look. And just thought to himself, there must be a better way of doing this. There must be a brand out there that's almost curating this look that he could buy from, and there wasn't. So this is where the entire thing began. The name itself was inspired by an old mechanic sign that he saw one day, where the name of the family name had dropped off, and there was just the Anne Sons remaining.
I love that. That's really cool.
And that's what sparked it. But it sparked the name. It's almost an anchor. With my branding hat on, this really was quite an exciting proposition, because you could collaborate with others, you could add another name into the mix, and it would be something Anne Sons. So the very nature of the brand early on was this idea of collaboration and working with others. So the Anne Sons name was great for that, and it kind of led to so many different things that we've done. But it was 4 years ago now that we launched. We launched through Kickstarter initially. So we managed to raise 50,000 through the crowdfunding channel, and created a relatively small database of potential customers who
invested. What was your target? Sorry, James.
It was we actually reached over, but we hit our target was 50,000, and we raised just over that in the end. So it was a tough campaign, very nerve wracking. I'm not sure if you've ever done anything like
that. I've spoken about it on the podcast before. I've done some notorious fails, but I'd be interested to know what ingredients you had or you implemented that made this campaign a success.
Well, I think it's largely down to the fact we've been very fortunate in that both of our studios have always created the assets, the content, the media that we've used throughout all of our marketing channels, and it's very beautiful. We've got Phil's an award-winning photographer. Like I said, the production studio do all the editing of the videos. And obviously with my agency then handled all the creative. So I think we had a very lucky or very good starting point, really, in that the brand was able to look and feel more polished and more engaging than I think a startup typically would. So the content that we put forward on Kickstarter was Phil talking about his passion for the brand and what he wanted it to achieve. And I think that struck a chord. And I think it was very timely. I think there's been an element of, within the fashion world where I think guys have a certain look and a certain even age are kind of underrepresented really in many ways. Who have gone through life always being followers of fashion, but come to a point in their life where, they don't want to follow trends. They find a look that they like and they want to stick with it. So I think it was timely. I think we aimed it and, marketed towards the right people. Typically, people within the creative sector make up a huge part of our demographic and our audiences, because for obvious reasons, it's kind of, if you look through the website, it's clothing that, it does look good, but it's incredibly comfortable to wear. You could wear it through the day and even go out for the evening and not have to change. It's a very versatile range of clothing. So I think, the timeliness of it, but also there felt to me as though there was a gap, certainly when Phil came to me with the project initially, just to do the branding, just to say, look, can you help me out? I'm launching this menswear brand. And I was so into it. I said, look, I'd love to be more involved. So that's how the partnership began. But I felt, for me even, that I was at that age where I was time poor, seeing some success from the agency. So I had a disposable income. I enjoyed fashion. I enjoyed spending money on fashion. And it just immediately resonated with me. So it gave me my look. And a lot of guys speak to us that say, I finally found my look once they bought from Antons.
Yeah, and that's great. And it's only with a certain maturity do you, like, perhaps, I mean, I'm in my 40s now, that you develop your own real sense of style. I think a lot of people have it when they're younger as well, like people that may be ahead of the game or, they're trying to really distinguish themselves. So they'll perhaps go a little bit too crazy with their wear just to get that identity. You almost settle down into a nice smooth gear when you hit your 40s. I certainly have, where I don't really dress to kind of stand out or get, people to have a spotlight on me. I dress for utility. I dress for comfort, but I also dress to have a certain uniqueness as well. So it's not logo driven. It's not like something that you typically see everybody else wear. I don't know if a lot of other guys find that gear as well in life. The people that I speak to and my friends do, but it certainly seems like something that you can find with Anson's.
Yes, certainly. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly it. Well, and I think there is, I'm sure there could be almost a curve drawn for the men's or a guy's lifestyle of fashion.
They would have like all these peacock outfits from their 20s, but the midlife crisis is interesting. So I think I had that sometime early in my late 20s.
No, I think the midlife crisis thing is what Phil would call it. But he'd spent many, many years in the industry working for clients, working for some huge clients on photo shoots. And likewise for me, running in the agency, helping clients to build brands. And it came to a point, driven largely by this want to create a fashion line, but also to do something for ourselves, to use all the things that we'd learned over the years and the experience that we had to apply it to a company of our own, as opposed to, maybe doing it for somebody else. And that turning point, it wasn't early on. The Kickstarter success was great, and it allowed us to, to launch the collection, but it's been a hard slog. It's been 4 years of blood, sweat, and tears, learning an entirely new trade. Mm. For Phil, designing, he designs every item that we have. He has an idea and a vision and a sketch, and that's how it begins. But working with factories, working with producers, both in the UK and abroad, that in itself is a huge job. And he's done it very well and learnt a lot. So it's been a learning curve for 4 years. But I think now we're at that stage where we certainly know our own identity, and it is a case of going back to those roots. Why did we do this in the first place? And understanding that every garment has to have a purpose. It has to do more than just look good. And you've raised the point there that you've hit a certain stage in your life where I think you are more discerning. You are your expectations of a garment, you know, you have much more of it. You know, look at fast fashion and look at some of the other brands that are producing relatively low quality gear, charging extortionate prices for it. And for us, you know, we feel our customers, they've got more about them. You know, they want to invest in clothing, and that's kind of what our collection is. It's a range of very almost, you know, kind of wardrobe essentials. You know, the layering, which is a huge part of it, is being able to layer up, you know, for colder climates, but also if you're dressing up. But it's almost we call it the manual for life, but the collection is effectively a modular system of clothing that you compare with other items and create this look. It's almost like the Haynes manual of fashion, maybe. I don't know how to call it that. But, and I think you do reach a point in your life, it's something that I wanted to get back to from that you said, that at that age where you just want to settle down a little bit with your clothing, but still have a very defined look. And I think, you know, Anne Sons is understated. We don't put a huge amount of design and graphic elements into our clothing. I think it's not about pushing the brand out there. It's about having something that people feel good in and feel comfortable wearing. That's always been the ethos.
Yeah. And while the products look great, and I was going to mention that it seems like a very British brand as well. So maybe you can touch upon the garments that are made in the UK, which ones are and which ones are made elsewhere. I know the denim you source from like the Northern Mills, Blackburn denim and stuff like that, and those looms.
That's
Perhaps you can just drill down a little bit on the selvedge denim that you got on the site.
Yeah, so this is not my forte. Obviously the products are designed and commissioned by Phil, but yes, the denim has been a huge thing for us. We originally made denim through one of our Turkish manufacturers, and Turkish denim's great. But we've always wanted to, within reason, and obviously something that's commercially viable, is create an entirely British range.
And that's not that common, is it? I mean, so typically a lot of people or a lot of brands outsource production just to keep the cost down on a lot of their garments. How important was it for you guys to make sure that this was a British product?
Massively. I mean, like I said, Phil's vision has always been to have an entirely British range, you know, an entire collection purely made here in the UK. Commercially, if you looked at it, the bare bones of it, it's not. But it's not about that. It was for us working with small independent producers. And creating, so you know, the sort of collections that we're, or the certain runs that we're doing, are really small. You know, we're making hundreds of garments in some of these pieces, because it's that for us they support the brand as opposed to being more of a commercial, you know, commercial venture, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you know, the process of going through and making that alone has been intense, but we, you know, even down to Phil insisting that they were made on Union Special machines, you know, they were to be made in the most traditional way possible, and yeah, it was a huge part. So that was our first the cutters and the rockers, which are our black selvedge, both in a 14-ounce, 12-ounce, they, you know, both made here in the UK. And we will continue to do that, but we do them in very small runs. So we're not, you know, they aren't part of our big collection. They are very much done, and they will always go through some design changes or new additions. So we have, you know, new styles coming out and new stuff coming along. And we'd like to do more denim. Something that we're talking about hopefully for autumn winter, which is a bit of a look behind the scenes, is a hardware range. We've called it for now, is a work in progress, but it's going to be going back to, you know, vintage buttons, very heavyweight fabrics, denims and canvases, and even maybe a tin cloth, and going to do a fully fledged, you know, workwear range, or heritage range that, you know, we've not done before. That's something that we're hoping to do for autumn winter this year.
A lot of the garments that I'm checking out on the site, you mentioned that they have a limited run. They almost feel like you can buy them and have them as collector's pieces later down the road.
Absolutely.
They also look fantastic. Some of the like the twists that you would do on the peacoat, for example, with all the additional details that you might not get on a conventional peacoat, the vinyl patches on the back of the elbows and the belts, etc. So there seems like there's just a lot of love that go into each garment.
A huge amount. I mean, Phil will lock himself in a room for weeks when he's doing this, sketching and putting ideas around. And like I said earlier on, every product has to have a purpose. It cannot just be for the sake of creating the peacoat or, you know, a pair of jeans. I mean, the jeans alone, they've got the cinch straps around the ankles. They've got secondary pockets. The chore pocket, as we've lovingly called it, is the it's an inner pocket that can come out from the front of the jean. And it was driven by the fact that Phil would spend all day shooting. He'd have lens caps in his jean pockets. His wife would may have to scrap that, actually, sorry. He would wash
mistress.
His jeans.
Sorry,
he would wash his jeans, or one of the, you know, him or his wife would wash his jeans. It sounded very sexist. Would be so frustrated by the fact that they were full of lens caps. So the chore pocket was there to him to use whilst on shoots, to put these lens caps in and be accessible. And since we found, you know, we've had barber shops buy them, we've had even restaurants and bars have used them for putting pens and notepads in to use for the staff. It's been, again, they have to have a purpose. They have this sort of utilitarian, but genuinely have, you know, additional things that make them rather quite special. So you're right, there's a lot of love that go into these products.
And I think people actually, it's these little things for me that really stand out and make me fall in love with a garment. I remember being at a tailor this time last year, and he was a gentleman who made suits for David Bowie, and he would show me like certain details of the suit jacket where you'd be able to just slide in an entire rolled newspaper and put like a little storm collar type belt around it, so it would just kind of fasten in and not fall out. And also little breast pockets that would be too small for a mobile phone, and I go, what is that? And he goes, oh, that's for your cigar. So anyway, it was, he made suits that were just, you'd have to look at it and then kind of figure it out, you know, like take the schematics of it and go, oh, I get it now. You would then be able to tell that story to other people whilst you were wearing it. And I think that kind of these little icebreakers are really fun when it comes to garments, aren't they?
They really are. And it does make them much more memorable. I think we talk about them as being investment pieces. They really are. They, you know, people do fall in love with them and do invest in them. Naturally, our denims, you know, people are wearing and going through the fade and break-in process. I mean, they're a 12, 13-ounce. They don't need heavy break-in. You know, the denim we use is soft enough. So it does, but it still has that element of having to wear in. And that's certainly something that we want to, go through and explore with the hardware range. You know, making them much more investment pieces, i.e. you need to really invest in them, you know, to make them comfortable. But so many ideas. And I think this is where for us, the difference of our brand amongst many others is that, you know, we aren't from the industry. We create clothing that we would want to wear, that our customers want to wear. We listen, we learn a lot from we call them our pioneers, but they are, you know, our customers are, you know, a great people. They've, you know, we have great conversations with them. It still feels as though we're creating a community of like-minded guys that just enjoy clothing and enjoy talking about it. So it's been driven by a desire to create things that we would want, as opposed to doing anything that necessarily is on trend or fits a certain look. And I do apologize, I'm having some building work done in the house, and they've started making rather a lot of noise. Let me know if it does cause any problems.
When they get the chainsaws out, maybe we'll have to take five.
So far they're knocking tiles off the wall. The future, we had a relatively lean collection when we launched, and I don't think even now we've really pushed all the ideas that we'd love to. I mean, if we had, you know, endless time and endless pockets, we would be creating collection after collection, and we don't, unfortunately. So everything we do has to be really considered. And like I said, we've been fortunate. We've been able to utilize the studios that we own that can help produce, you know, amazing imagery and amazing content, because everything we've done to date has been, you know, it's been done by the two of us. It's a very, very small, small outfit. Smaller than a lot of people think, I think.
Right. I mean, yeah. So is it just you two? Or do you,
well,
you,
I mean,
how big is the team now?
Well, the team is myself and Phil, yes. And Phil's wife, Kelly, is kind of manages the operations side of things, as Phil and I are not particularly organized or process driven people as creatives. So she keeps us in check and makes sure everything runs smoothly. And then, like I said, we utilize the studios for the majority of the marketing work and the content. And we have some freelancers that we use for social and some of our online stuff, but that's it. And our suppliers, of course, who, like I said, it's about 50% of the range now. The waistcoats, the denims, the boots are all in the UK. So, you know, we have a handful of manufacturers we've worked with since we started, who have been great to us.
Well, the website looks fantastic, mate. So congratulations on that. A nice, clean website. But, I mean, you touched upon the imagery. I think this is really you mentioned the ethos and the philosophy of the brand, kind of harnessing all that creativity that you and Phil imbibe, really, with the brand. It really does scream through when you go onto the page and you look at the products and the videos as well. So I was going to get on to, like, I mean, video in the last... Well, it's been around forever. YouTube's been around forever. I'm not going to say anything new or revolutionary here. But in terms of platforms really thirsty for video, like you hear about the likes of LinkedIn now kind of promoting just organic video like you wouldn't believe. Like Facebook right. obviously did it a lot, but now you have to kind of pay for it to get it noticed and get it above the parapet, etc. But I guess for you guys, early on, video was a very important part of the puzzle in terms of getting the project and the brand off the ground.
Massively, again, because we have those expertise effectively in-house, but largely because we had such great content and we wanted an outlet for it. So for us, up until very recently, Instagram has been pretty much leading the way for us, because very visual platform. You know, they've moved on even in the 4 years that we've been going, offering stories and video, you know, video, much easier for video content to be put out there. But naturally, everything we do and we create goes onto the video channels. And recently Pinterest, for whatever reason, we've been doing a bit through Pinterest, just by simply, you know, uploading our garments and stuff. And we've seen huge traction there with an entirely new audience in many ways. I think with Instagram now, it's very, very difficult to stay in that feed, very difficult to stay in people's in that front of mind with so much content going out, particularly in the last quarter, really, with lockdown, the amount of brands that were putting out content. I mean, we did it. We went through a phase where, I mean, that's all we were doing. We were just generating, and with quite strict limitations around, you know, we couldn't shoot any models. We had to, you know, start to be really even more creative, I guess, with how we promoted our clothing and how we, you know, so we started going to more traditional means of flat lay photography, styling through very simple, you know, very simple flat lays that were just showing people how to wear the garments. But it was great for us in many ways, because it almost felt as though we'd gone back to basics a little bit, and we'd really, you know, we're just creating really solid content driven by the product itself. Whereas before, you know, we were doing lots of lifestyle photography, lots of on-location stuff. And again, always on a shoestring. So fortunately for Phil, he would travel the world with his job, and any opportunity he got, he would also commission a shoot with some models. So a lot of what you see here has been shot in New York and, yes, in the UK, but all over Paris, which it sounds very glamorous, but it was just simply because he was there anyway.
It gives it a very international, worldly feel, doesn't it, to the brand?
Yeah. So it's British inspired. You know, we've just launched our sort of trading post and our boxer collection of tees, and they're inspired by ghost signs that you'd see in and around sort of London and Birmingham, and in that kind of faded, beautiful old advertising that you know, for me personally, has always been a huge piece of inspiration. So we're still taking a lot of influence from British design and British, you know, industry and things. But yeah, it is an international brand. I like to think of it as an international brand because we do have customers all over the world. And, you know, that in itself causes, you know, causes challenges because, you know, with translation through the site or live chats where we've got, you know, guys all over the world talking to us in their native language and we're either having to translate or at least be, you know, trying to see whether we can get through in English. So yeah, that expansion, which certainly through lockdown has been, has been big. You know, we have seen huge growth in the last 3 or 4 months, I think, because, you know, people have been at home and they've been looking for inspiration. They've been looking for new brands that they'd like to be part of. Mm. And fortunately, we've been one of them.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it's andsons.co.uk is a place to go and take a look at these great products. And then you'll find all the links through that, the YouTube, Instagram, andsons UK on Instagram. And Pinterest, of course. I've got to check out the Pinterest now and figure out what the secret is. How come you're leveraging traffic through Pinterest? I've always wanted to.
More and more platforms just to try and find your way through nowadays, isn't it? So, but thank you very much for the call. It's been really enjoyable.
Oh, James, it's been great talking to you. I'm sorry we didn't get hold of Phil today. Hopefully, we can get him on the show in the future and we'll get to hear more about his story as well. But
absolutely.
In the meantime, congratulations, mate, on the brand, on the product, and very best of luck.
Thank you very much. It was great to speak to you.
Cheers, James. Take care.
Cool. Take care. Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. James Caldale there. Thanks so much, James, and thank you guys for listening. Make sure you're checking out andsons.co.uk. If you like what you hear, and you want to support the podcast, you can simply leave a review on iTunes. Apparently it helps. I don't know how the tech thing works, but engagement, reviews, and we read them all, by the way. So it's great you guys are leaving some reviews already. We do get round to reading them. Okay, that's it from me. Again, thanks for tuning in. And until next time, remember, it's only fashion, people, and you're never fully dressed without a smile.